Talk Back with Gary Null, Sundays at 8 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
Oh, a happy day.
Oh, happy day.
When Jesus wore.
Jesus wore.
Oh, when he wore.
Jesus wore.
When Jesus wore.
Jesus wore.
He washed my sins away.
Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Pleasure to be with you today. We're not going to have a guest in this hour, except later, Dr. Martin Feldman is going to tell us all about this very important bromelain. This natural substance, you can find it in the core, that pithy part of the pineapple. Well, it has a lot of things it can do in the body, and he's going to tell us because we should be having this on a regular basis. I'm going to spend most of today's program addressing issues that are important to you. Please keep in mind that we're heard on land-based stations all across the United States. From my home state of West Virginia, down in Bluefield, we have a station carrying us to Washington and Los Angeles, New York. So we have an audience that's American, but we have over half of the audience listening are from around the world. Please feel free to email us at askgary@garynull.com, and your question will be read during the week. But now you can call in if you're in North America. That means United States and Canada. Also, it may include Mexico. You can call from 888 or 2-888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. It doesn't matter what the issue is. You have now an open forum. That's why this particular part of our program is called Talk Back. You can share your points of view. You can ask questions in anything we talk about. As long as it's something that we deal with on a regular basis, we're happy to invite you to share your points of view. In the interim, until those calls come up, I'm going to be sharing the latest on health and environmental issues, things that can impact directly upon our well-being. All the information I share comes from mainstream science, and I simply emphasize that and give you the citations because there has been, for over 35 years, an ongoing battle by the FDA to try to denigrate natural health and healing information and its advocates. There are a group of individuals totally discredited if you do your homework called Quackbusters. These people are there as the voices of ultra-orthodox establishment points of view, the official point of view. The trouble is they're almost wrong on every single point they talk about. And those people who are the advocates of health and healing, those are the ones they attack. Unfortunately, the New York Times and the mainstream media uses them, and they're always saying, oh, they have unsupported. So that's why we go out of our way to give you the background and show you that mainstream independent science is the greatest cheerleader for alternative healing. For example, juice may beat fruit for preventing heart disease. Now, it doesn't matter what kind of juice. Most people would eat apple juice or drink apple juice. But also it could be grape juice, it could be watermelon juice. And this study shows that these can help prevent atherosclerosis even when the people or the animals in the experiment were on a high-fat, high-cholesterol diet. Now, the juices have more powerful anti-hyperactive benefits than the fruit itself. That's according to Dr. DeCordy of the University of Montpellier, and this is a French study, showing for the first time that, quote, processing fruit can have a, quote, major impact on health. Now, most of the fruit people eat is processed, the researcher said, and it's sprayed, it's not grown organically, and a lot of people don't like regular fruit because it's not as sweet as, let's say, the fruit concentrates that are loaded with sugar or the fruit drinks that people have and think, oh, gee whiz, I got some real fruit in here. What they did in this study is simple. They wanted to examine the healing property of fruit juices and especially the phenolic compounds and the powerful antioxidants. And after all, you can consume more of these when you drink a juice than you can when you eat a fruit. For example, if you eat 3 apples, that's maxing out on apples. But the juice of 3 apples is about 12 ounces. So that's not a lot of juice. In fact, I'm recommending people consume about 12, 16-ounce glasses of fresh vegetable and fruit juice a day. And then if you dried the juice, you would end up with a little teaspoon, less, probably a half a teaspoon of the actual healing ingredients that were in there. But in this one, what they did is they wanted to see what impact juices would have on the fatty plaque buildup in the arteries that can lead to heart attack and stroke. And the amount of the fruit the experiment animals consume was equivalent to 3 apples or 3 bunches of grapes daily for a human. And that's what they consumed. And they had enormous benefit, just enormous benefit. Compared to the animals given water, those given the fruit or fruit juices had lower cholesterol, lower oxidative stress, less fat accumulation in their aorta, the main vessel supplying oxygen blood to the body, and the dark grape juice had the strongest effect, followed by purple grapes, apple juice, and apples. So what this tells us is this. When you drink a fresh-made juice, especially if you have colorful vegetables and fruits, you're flooding the body with phenols, P-H-E-N-O-L-S. These are very beneficial healing compounds. You're also giving the body vitamin C, carotenoids, antioxidants. The total of all of this together is enormous benefit. According to the conclusion in the scientific article, quote, these provide encouraging results showing that fruit and fruit juices may have a significant clinical public health relevance. Well, what if now every hospital in the world began to serve fresh organic juices every day? Throughout the day, you would see an enormous benefit to people's health. From the environment, congressional proposals aim to eviscerate environmental laws along the U.S. border and coast. Now, what's this mean in lay language? Under the guise of border security, bills would eliminate measures protecting our air, water, and endangered species. There are 2 bills pending in Congress that would eliminate environmental laws along all the U.S. borderline. That's an awful lot of land. It's called the National Security and Federal Lands Protection Act, or H.R. 1505. It was introduced by Republican Bob Bishop, and it would mean that an awful lot of pollution could occur now, and nobody would have any say-so over it. And they're hiding all this under national security. What it is there's a lot of factories, a lot of manufacturing factories. There's also a lot of developers that would like to be able to do what they want to do to make money along our borders without having to worry about those inconvenient environmental requirements. You know, like not polluting our underground water and what you flush into the ocean or nearby lake or river, and this would allow them to do it. Just one more assault against our natural resources. Now, there's a new study that you have not heard about yet, and I'm going to share this information with you now. And this study shows that nations requiring the most vaccines tend to have the worst infant mortality rates. And this is a major study, and I looked at all of the aspects of this study, and it made a lot of sense. And what they did is they had a chart of every one of the vaccine schedules for every major nation. They took 49 nations, and the United States was dead last, meaning we had high, high infant mortality, and we had the most vaccines per child. And this is really startling because it shows that the more vaccines your child gets, the more susceptible they are to sudden infant death syndrome. And those nations that get very few vaccines have the lowest infant mortality rate from any form of death after vaccine. So another one of these studies that comes out, published in a peer-reviewed journal, and not a single word in the mainstream media. Not a word. Back to the environment. Many of you know that I've been filming an important documentary on the 12 tipping points. These are each very, very crucial to the survival of species and our quality of life. You've also heard me mention that we are now in chaos theory on every single one. That four of these major tipping points will tip, are going to tip no matter what we do. Others, we still have something we can do about it. I have not seen our government, nor have I seen any other government in the world, really take this on. I've sent interim reports to various governmental agencies because you would think that they would be able to do all this research. You would assume that they would come up with conclusions. And in the United States, we have had, from NASA, some projections. But then all this is then weighed against the politics of, as a scientist in an agency, you just can't bring an article out. You have to vet it through the department heads, and then it has to be vetted through the head of the whole agency, and there's where the politicians come in. And always the heads of these agencies are people who are political appointed, and they're politically appointed because they want to protect the industries that they came from. They come to the government, they work in the government for a short period of time and go back into those industries, having saved their industries a lot of money. So we're never given the full truth about anything. We're lied to about everything. And it's unfortunate, but that's just the way it is. The one thing that did get out was NASA just a week ago told us that we will have next year a major worldwide magnetic hit. We'll have a solar hit that will affect the magnetic force field around the world. Those living less on the grid using electricity will not be affected as much. Those like the United States that use more electricity than any other nation in the world, and more of our lives are associated with electrical uses, will have a big hit. And just imagine the electrical storm comes, and in an instant, in like a second, suddenly nothing electric works. Your telephone won't work. The gas coming up out of the gas station pump won't work. Your water won't come out of your faucet because there's a water pump that makes that happen. Your elevator won't work. Your refrigerator and freezers are not going to work. Your cell phone won't work. Your computer won't work. In fact, everything electric won't work. Now, those who are using other sources that are off the grid, fine. That's the way we should be. Now, we still have time to start making major inroads, but here's the catch-22. If the government is completely honest and makes this a national priority, a lot of repair could be done. We could shift over to solar, wind, geothermal, water wave, and even gas. All of that could help. But we don't have the political will to do it. So what will happen is you won't hear a word about it. And if you do, they'll go into denial that that's just scary talk by extremists, and we have everything under control. These are the same people who had it under control with Katrina and the levees. Yeah, they had it under control. These are the same people who had it under control at the nuclear power plant in Japan. Boy, they had that under control, didn't they? Or they were sure that no tsunami would get to that height, so they had water walls that they had spent billions of dollars on. Yeah, well, that didn't work. That's like the Maginot Line that the French built, and the Germans just flew over. All that effort, all that money, all that time, and gee whiz, someone thought, you think maybe they can just fly over this wall? Yeah, they did, and the French lost very quickly. So there is no protection if you're on that grid. People in hospitals, The emergency backup units will only work for a relatively short period of time, for a few days, because where are they going to get the backup batteries? Where are they going to get the backup electricity? They're not. So once those batteries die, then the people, you won't have people being able to do anything that requires electricity. In effect, people will be working off candlelight in some places. And who's going to walk up into an elevator when you get up there? There's nothing you can do. You're all on the computer. And the computer's not working. You kind of get the idea that, gee whiz, we're just not mature enough as a nation to even discuss what happens when we had a catastrophic event, trying to prevent it as much as possible, because we realize how many people are in their comfort zone. They don't want to hear this. Don't tell me something that is going to make me feel bad or something I can't do anything about myself. Well, almost all people could do something now to prepare, like getting basic grains and legumes in bulk, by getting candles and getting lots of batteries, by getting lots of bottled water, by being able to have some propane or gas. Now, if you live in the country, there's a whole lot you can do. And if you really want to get adventurous, then start looking at solar, because solar, the price of solar keeps coming down about 20% per year. But this is going to hit everyone. It's just not everyone will be adversely affected. Ironic that those who have been progressive and those who have been self-actualizing will be the ones who won't be affected. The ones who will be affected are the limousine liberals. You know, those people, the ones that call themselves Democrat, which they are, and liberal, which they are, but they don't have one speck of humanistic, spiritual, or progressive energy or motivation in them. These are the Clinton Democrats. These are Obama Democrats. These are the people that will take someone who was failed in their operations as a White House chief of staff under Clinton and make them head of the CIA and make them then head of defense. It's just musical chairs. These are the people who are all power. They're corporatists. But they're not good corporatists. These are bad corporatists. And these are the people who will try to play down any emergency, play down any fear, play down anything that we have to do that makes us feel uncomfortable, because they're not into discomfort. Everything in their life is comfort and power. So the majority of Americans will side with them, thinking, okay, if you tell me there's not a big deal, if you tell me that it's not going to happen here, if you tell me it'll just be a little inconvenience, I'll trust you. And then what are you going to do when it happens? So it's not, is it going to happen? Yes, it is. And the government's own agency said so. It's when, we don't know exactly. How bad will it be? We don't know exactly. Will it change life as we know it for years? Yes, it will. This will not be one of those problems that will be fixed based upon a rolling blackout, where you still have electricity, you still have grids that work. All those grids are going to be fried. And then people say, but why weren't we told? Why did we wake up in our face with this cataclysmic event? I mean, we have no food. You know, the food we had in the fridge, we eat after about 3 or 4 days, and the other food, you know, in the freezer, it's gone, and it's 2 weeks now, and we can't find water, and every store's out of water. What are we supposed to do? And we can't hear from anyone because the television doesn't work and the internet doesn't work, so we're getting our information, you know, by mouth. Word of mouth. Sounds almost apocalyptic. And by the way, that's not the worst that can happen. Oh, that'll be about 100,000 times worse than Katrina, but there's worse still coming. I'll save that for next week when I have an in-depth discussion on the 14 tipping points. And by the way, I have yet to find any person who can name even half the tipping points, let alone tell me what they mean when they do name them. We are really an illiterate nation about what's important, and we're overwhelmed with it, trivia that is of no significance. In any case, don't expect any honesty out of any government agency because, quote, they don't want to panic the public. Quote, this is effects of climate change in Arctic more extensive than expected, report finds. All right? And here is what this says. This is from Science Daily. This is mainstream science talking now, and I'll quote this verbatim. It says, a much reduced covering of snow, shorter winter season, and thawing tundra, the effects of climate change in the Arctic are already here. And the changes are taking place significantly faster than previously thought. Let me repeat that. The changes are taking place significantly faster than previously thought. This is what emerges from a new research report on the Arctic presented in Copenhagen this week at Lund University. And just one of the researchers, Margareta Johansson, along with Terry Callahan at the Royal Swedish Academy of Sciences, and, quote, the changes we are seeing are dramatic and they are not coincidental. The trends are unequivocal and deviate from the norm when compared with a longer-term perspective. Now, what's this mean in lay language? You know, these real smart alecks of the air, they have a twit of positive energy and no solutions, and yet they deny global warming, they deny that there's a problem, they don't want industry held responsible, they don't want to talk about any issue that requires any money being spent to fix any problem. It's like these are all spitting cobras, and they're blathers. They lack true intellect, they have no sense of scholarship, they have no real background in having helped anyone with anything, and yet they're extremely popular, which tells me as much about their audience as does them. And these are the people who deny all this. Well, deny as you will, but at the end of the day, this is what's happening. The Arctic, a little background, and you can pass this on to these individuals. I don't question their right to be wrong. I don't question their arrogance. I don't question the need for their ego. Because I see what happens with anyone who has that kind of power and could use it for positive healing or use it for destructive purposes. In almost everything, the problem is simple. It's the liberals, they're the problem. It's the progressives, they're the problem. Because they equate progressive with changes that actually count. And that's something they don't want. They want everything to be the market. Excuse me, is this the same market that we just had? Let me try to bring a little bit of common sense to this. Nothing more than common sense. Let's just say for a moment that you're a free market person. You believe let the market dictate our reality. Okay, I accept that. Now, I'm going to say, however, don't make exceptions. All right? So if you say that if you're a business person and you invest your life savings and what you were able to borrow and you went in there and you succeeded, then you have a right to your profits. You have a right to your success. But let's say you fail. They'll say, sorry, Charlie, you failed. You got to pack it in and you got to learn some lessons. And you know, but that's your dime. You know, you risked, you failed. Goodbye. Okay, so now we understand their rules. The basic rules of the market is that you have a right to your profits. You have a right to succeed. No one can limit how much success you have. No one can limit how much money you make. All right. But then we take a look at the 15 largest banks in the United States. They all failed. So shouldn't they have been taken through a structured bankruptcy? Shouldn't all the stockholders have lost what they invested because it was their risk? Did they ever question the ethics of how the money was being made? Not once. Did they come and protest and sell their stock saying, I can't keep supporting a bank that makes this money out of derivatives and credit default swaps and trading in currencies, essential life? I can't do that. No. So the stockholders were part of the problem because they're the ones who are gaining, and all the board of directors and all the people, they should all have been fired. That's what you do when you have a restructuring and bankruptcy. You change all the way that business was done, especially for those people who put you in that bad position. No, those people were rewarded. They were given bonuses. The stockholders made whole. The money went from the American public, who was in real pain and needed help. Nothing went to the American public. And the banks that were holding all these toxic losses were able to give their toxic losses to the Federal Reserve. There was a shift of money. Money went from the Federal Reserve to the banks and the major corporations. And then the public lost value in its homes. Lost its homes, lost jobs, lost 401ks, lost asset value of over $7 trillion. None of that was made whole. But every nickel that the banks lost, they were made whole. Major corporations like General Motors were made whole. AIG, the insurance agent, made whole. Then we find out beyond all these people, there was a quantitative easing. The $3 trillion, that's $3 trillion, was given with no interest. And then these people turned around and then loaned it to the Treasury to buy Treasury bills. They got the money for zero interest, and they charged the United States Treasury 3.5 interest. That's 350% interest. They made just one bank alone. And Bank America made over $450 million net profit in interest from money it never had to take possession of. It was the Federal Reserve. They simply agreed to take the money, and by that agreeing to take it at zero, what did they get for collateral? Toxic assets, bad loans, bad deals. So they were able to scrub all their bad debt for free. They got all this new money for free. They were able to loan that money to our Treasury at an interest rate, or use it in the marketplace and make up to 800% interest. 800% profit, I should say. So all big corporations are helped. Small businesses and individuals are not. So what part of a complete contradiction is this? And there's utter hypocrisy. Mark Levin and all these people are not playing by the rules. You shouldn't save a company because of its size. If you're going to say the market dictates, then let the market dictate on everything you do. In which case, then most Fortune 500 companies would be bankrupt. And most of the insider corporations would be bankrupt. And most of the banks would be bankrupt. And all the Wall Street firms would be bankrupt. Well, that's a good thing. If we'd allowed all those people and all those companies to go broke, we would be better off today. But we didn't. We, the people who have not been helped at all, had the greatest shift in money from the rich, all their dead assets, bad assets, toxic assets, the Fed took, and we gave them money that should have gone to the American public. So anyhow, it's just a contradiction. Every time I turn around, these people are not challenged by people who would say, look, you're talking nonsense. You don't know what you're talking about. You're functionally illiterate. You know, you pretend to know things. The people you have on your program are all discredited. Newt Gingrich and Dick Morris and Oliver North. Did you ever look in any of these people's backgrounds? Who would hire any of these people? Well, Fox does. Judith Miller, the one who said that there were weapons of mass destruction, got us into the Iraq War. She's at the Fox Network. What do you have to do to get work at Fox Network? I mean, think of the crimes, misdemeanors, think of the lack of moral judgment, and then think of, gee whiz, you get a nice fat paycheck. I don't know anybody in my circle that would contemplate bringing these people in for advice since they've been wrong about so many things with such terrible consequences, where they lack such moral fiber, and yet they're there for an expert opinion. Expert on what? In any case, these are the same people who are telling us the climate isn't going to change, it's not changing, it's all scare tactics. Well, here's a little history lesson. The Arctic is one of the parts of the globe that is warming up fastest. Measurements of the air temperature show that the most recent five-year period has been the warmest since 1880. That's when monitoring began. Other data from tree rings, among other things, show that the summer temperatures over the last decades have been the highest in 2,000 years. As a consequence, the snow cover in May and June has decreased by 20%. The winter season has also become almost 2 weeks shorter in just two decades. In addition, the temperature in the permafrost has increased between a half a degree and 2 degrees. Quote, there is no indication that the permafrost will not continue to thaw. Now, that means that large quantities of carbon are stored in the permafrost. The ground that was previously frozen is now thawing. Quote, our data show there is significantly more than previously thought. There's approximately double the amount of carbon in the permafrost as there is in the atmosphere today. Unquote. That's according to Margareta Johansson. Now, what does this mean in lay language? The carbon comes from organic material, which was deep frozen in the ground during the last ice age. Now, as long as the ground is frozen, the carbon remains stable. But as the permafrost thaws, there's a risk that carbon dioxide and methane A greenhouse gas more than 20 times more powerful than carbon dioxide will be released, which could increase global warming. All right? Now, the effects of this type, the so-called feedback effects, are a major significance for how extensive global warming will be in the future. And she said, quote, but it is also possible that the vegetation, which will be able to grow when the ground thaws, will absorb the carbon dioxide. We still know very little about this. And so there we are. So the Arctic is getting warmer. That's bad. The future does not look bright. Climate models show that the temperatures will rise up to 7 degrees. And in Canada, the uppermost area, the permafrost, will fall on approximately one-fifth of the surface currently covered by permafrost. That's equivalent figure for Alaska is 57%. The length of the winter season and the snow coverage in the Arctic will continue to decrease, and glaciers in the area will lose about 30% of their total mass. All this in the near future. Much of this within people's lifetime. Because what they used to say, oh, it'll be 100 years. Now it's 50 years. Now it's 30 years. Now it's 10 years. So I'm just letting you know that that's what's coming at you. Now, where's the best place in the United States to do business? I'll tell you the worst two. The worst two, according to the reports, are New York, New Jersey, then Illinois and Michigan. Those are the worst. What about the best places? Texas. Oh, California is also right up there, the worst state. Why? Well, simple. In New York State, as a person who has done business, I can tell you that it's extremely, extremely difficult to do any business in New York State without being overloaded with ordinances and zoning and bureaucrats all the time there to charge you for anything. I mean, if you have a garage sale, you got to get a permit. And why? Why do you have to have some local bureaucracy tell you you can sell some old stuff? Because they're exploiting the power they have. And then you end up around communities. Generally, these are baby boomers from New York who migrate into the country and then decide, don't change anything here. We don't like it. So if you wanted to do a bakery or if you wanted to do a craft, oh, you can't just do that. No. No, you've got to get permission. And that means local town boards and meetings and people saying, well, we're not sure if we want that here. And you say, but I'm not near you. I'm you can't even see where I'm at, and it's not going to disrupt anything. Yeah, but we... And next thing you know, you've got people telling you how to live your life. New York, I wouldn't do another business in. I wouldn't. Ever. I've had opportunities to buy places, opportunities to... at beautiful places upstate, and indeed it is one of the most beautiful states, and a lot of nice people, but no. No, New York is going bankrupt, and they're just going to put more taxes upon the people, and they'll find more ingenious ways to mess in your life. Texas is better because down there you don't have zoning. You can do what you want to do. And they don't have state income tax. A big plus. Well, that means if you don't want to have someone telling you what you can do, you want to open up a holistic center, you want to open up a hospice, you want to open up a spa, you can do that without hassle. In California, they got 15 bureaucrats to explain why the answer is no before you even ask the question. I mean, you have to be close. Well, I won't say what I think. I'll just tell you, California is not my favorite place to do business of any kind. And then New Jersey is utterly corrupt at every level. And nothing changes New Jersey, nor New York, nor California. So if you want a future, find the states at least that are allowing people to have a chance to do their own home-based businesses without having someone come in and say, did you cut down that tree? It was dead. Yeah, $400 fine. This actually happened to someone I know. And he called me, said, I can't believe it. This was a dead tree. So he had to go through, I told him to go through, get an agronomist in there, determine what the blight was of the tree, then get your scientific evidence, take it in. 5 months he did all this work till finally they had to acknowledge that he was right, and they backed off, but not before they put him through a torture. All because some bureaucrat decided there was a tree that shouldn't have been removed without a permit. How much was the permit? $450. Now, these are the bureaucracies that the limousine liberals love. But the rest of us that live in the real world, we don't want excessive rules. We don't want excessive regulations. We want to live by rules and regulations that are moral and ethical and that honor the environment. We don't want silent partners in our business like Tony Soprano, who comes along and says, give me 20% of your take each month. For what? Protection. So you're going to protect me from whom? Me. So I have to pay you so that you don't come back and do something in my business. That's what it's like doing business in New York, New Jersey, and California. They are utterly criminal. And they have so much control that if you put every one of these wretched creeps in prison, you wouldn't have anyone left in any of their state legislature or their Capitol buildings. Those are my personal feelings, and I'd love to debate anyone who thinks otherwise. Call me up, because I really, really can't stand unnecessary bureaucracy. But I live in the real world. It's different. If you actually live in the real world, where you actually have to do something, you actually have to create something, you actually have to be responsible for something, it's a whole lot different than if you're just gliding by where someone else has to take responsibility. I was just given an email that says, what was the study on where they had the most vaccines, they had the most infant death? It was published in Human and Experimental Toxicology. The authors are Neil Z. Miller and Gary Goldman, and in the May 4th issue. So it's Human Experimental Toxicology. And what it showed was that the infant mortality rate is one of the most important indicators of the socioeconomic well-being and public health conditions of a country. So when you look at the lowest amount of vaccines, Singapore, with just 2, and you look at the United States with the most, and then you look at their ranking in infant death per group, the United States has the worst and Singapore has the best. Sweden's right behind Singapore, then Japan, Iceland, France, Finland, Norway, Malta, Andorra, Czech Republic, Germany, Switzerland, Spain, Israel, Liechtenstein, Slovakia are all way ahead of the United States. But then again, they don't do all the vaccinations. So this is just the latest study showing the relationship between vaccinations and sudden infant death. And you won't see that change in the United States because of our politics. I'm Gary Knoll. We're going to now take calls on any of the issues you find important. We're going to go to your calls. Our number is 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. Let's say hello to Al from Long Island. Hi, Al. You're on the air.
Gary, I have a question about compulsive disorder in early childhood. When does it begin? Usually we talk about hand-washing when we talk about compulsive disorder, but actually there are many other types of compulsive disorder that are more severe, that can actually disfigure the child and are considered repulsive, actually. The causes, the nature of the disorder, the impact, if it's left untreated, upon the family relationships.
Disconnect the call. We got a problem there with the audio. All right, you've given me enough information I'm happy to address. Let's start with one of the most obvious. Many children end up with learning disabilities or brain malfunction due to environmental impacts. These could be, right at the top of the list, would be vaccines, the number of vaccines and how the vaccines are given. The more vaccines, the more susceptible the child is or sensitive the child is to the ingredients, such as mercury or aluminum, formaldehyde, then the child can have neurological disruption. The trouble is it's almost impossible to determine, as the fetus is developing, what impact at the neurological level that anything the mother is having. We know, for example, that mothers that drink alcohol end up with children who have very similar biochemistry as an alcoholic. They're going to have problems with their liver, their kidneys, and their brain, and their heart. So once you start to see that a child is having repetitive action and you start to realize, okay, there is a pattern here that's not normal, that's when a holistic neurologist, a holistic, let's say, brain behavioralist, will be able to give some guidance and help. Because sometimes by detoxification, and that is the principal theme for helping any child who is autistic or has anything on a spectrum of disorders, detoxify the body. Now, there are many different ways of detoxifying, and we've talked about it extensively, but getting the heavy metals out and then making sure that there's no chemicals, because once you see that a child is hypersensitive, you have to give them fresh organic produce. You can't give them anything. It's artificial sweeteners, artificial coloring agents, preservatives. All that is extremely bad for the kid. Don't give them any. You have to be very diligent. I've seen many kids with OCD when they're detoxed, and especially when you start detoxifying and then giving them methylated B12, methylated folic acid, dairy-free, wheat-free, rebuild the intestines, give them strong anti-inflammatory agents like curcumin and bromelain. In fact, Dr. Feldman is going to talk about bromelain. All this will make a difference. Okay? And then I've seen substantial improvement in many of those. Thank you. Jay from New York City. Hi, Jay. You're on the air.
Hey, Gary. I want to ask you about this solar flare that you're talking about. If you're driving and this happens, obviously it seems that the computer would be fried in your car, but if the car is not running at the time, would it start later on? And
it
if you could
should.
Just comment about what's recently happened with gold and silver, just your views on that.
Okay, well, as if you remember, I supported the use of gold as a backup currency reserve, and then silver, when silver was at $3 an ounce and gold was at $220 an ounce. So for those who invested, and I said invest and forget that it exists, because there's going to be a lot of volatility, including there'll be at least once a year when people will take it up, the speculators will take it up to short it, bring it down, take their profits. But as long as the dollar continues to be a fiat currency, which it is, and as long as we are printing money that we have nothing to back up, which we don't, and as long as the Federal Reserve is buying 75% of the Treasury bills, which it does, and frequently having then the banks pay back the debt, which it does, so the banks make a 2 to 3.5% profit or 200 to 300% profit for having invested nothing, which they're doing, into the hundreds of billions of dollars each, trillions totally, then what you have is you have us being no better than let's say Brazil or Argentina was. In other words, we are flooding the market, flooding it more than any time in our history in a greater quantity of dollars, which means that the existing dollars that people are holding will lose their value. But they say, but we want to protect the world against hyperinflation. Well, as long as you're charging zero interest, then you're not going to have hyperinflation on the money, but you will have hyperinflation on food, for example. We're seeing that now. You'll have it on other products that you buy, just not on the cost of the dollar. And all this is because we're the reserve currency. When the reserve currency status is gone, which will happen in the next 2 to 3 years, where the BRICS that's now their South Africa, as part of Brazil and Russia and India and China, their currencies are stronger than ours. They have less debt than we do. They have booming economies going anywhere between 7 and 10% gross domestic product growth. Ours was 1.3%. So we're in the toilet. We have outsourced all of our jobs. We have imported cheap ingredients, cheap products. We are flooded in debt. We have $1 trillion in credit card debt. We have $1 trillion in student loan debt. We have people who are underwater. About 60% of all homes are underwater in, for example, Nevada and many places in California. This market's not coming back. The real estate market's going to take another dump down between 20 to 40%. But everything will collapse, and we will go into a massive depression in the United States when the BRICS nations and the International Monetary Fund decide that the American dollar is no longer the dollar of currency of reserve, and that means people will flood out of the dollar. Already in China, they're taking the trillion dollars that they have given to us, and Japan is about $870 billion. All told, we have over $6 trillion out there that we've sold people, so they've been holding it. These people are using that money, they're cashing that money and building factories and roads and giant equipment. They're getting as much out of that dollar now as possible. And I know this for a fact because one of the people at a major Wall Street firm was the overseer of the China desk. And in a conversation, he told me they're unloading a ton of dollars, but they're doing it quietly, and you don't see them buying the dollars as they used to. So we're still going ahead and, you know, printing money, billions of dollars per week, and we have no one to really buy it anymore. Japan's not going to buy anymore. It was number one buyer for a long time. It can't. It's broke. It has to rebuild its own country. I estimate that to really rebuild Japan so it's sustainable in the future, it's going to run them at least $500 billion and probably $1 trillion. Now, that's good in one sense. They have that money. They're holding our dollars, so they can just use the money that they have given us. They can use those dollars and start rebuilding, because you're looking at roads that have to be completely rebuilt. You're looking at water walls that now have to be at least 60 feet high, because some parts of the island they had waves that hit were 70 feet. They have to redo whole areas, hundreds of square miles of land that are permanently contaminated, and you can't just scrape off the top. They have to move all that farmland. They have to move whole villages back. You can't just build on the water again. So it's not about, let's just rebuild, like they stupidly did. I mean, if you want to see mind-numbingly stupid Corps of Engineer action, as if there's any other, go down to the ninth lower ward. It's the low ward because it's low to the sea level and about 7 feet below sea level, and you won't see anything that's been done to help the average person. You'll see thousands of houses that look like they were just hit by a wave yesterday. You'll see a wall, and you say, well, where'd that $40 billion went? Well, look for the private contractors, the ones that made fortunes off the concrete and the steel and all that building up the wall. But the wall, it will not protect them against a Category 4 or 5 hurricane. And it will only raise the protection and keep a breach from happening in about 7 inches. So gee whiz, if as long as we have a hurricane category 1 or 2, we're okay. 3, it's going to be a problem. 4 or 5, we're right back to devastation again. So it was all for nothing. I mean, the public weren't helped. They should have removed all the people, leveled the whole area, and put them in a safe place and rebuild a whole community. They could have done that with the money they wasted on just repairing the wall. And they didn't do a thing about Mr. Big, which is the canal that's going to cause that problem. And in any case, it's just we just don't seem to have a handle on doing anything right, because everything is a political decision and an economic decision based upon who would benefit or who would lose from the decisions we make. So we don't have really in the right people. We have a lot of right people. We have a lot of smart people. We have a lot of good ideas. It's just not being implemented by our government, ever. So that is my take on that. I see gold and silver will both continue to go up, but then they'll be shorted down. But the watch gold go through right through the roof. I predict gold will go to 3,000 as soon as the mixed currencies come in. And then you're going to see hyperinflation with the dollar. They're going to have to raise the interest rate in the dollar, but right now they can't. Our entire society is dysfunctional to that damn dollar. So that's where we're at on that. Does that answer your question? And yes, if you turn the engine off on a car, there should be no reason why the electricity would be affected, and then you could turn it back on afterwards. It will not impact anything that is not carrying a current or connected to a main current, like an overhead grid. Does that answer your question there?
It does. Thank you so much.
All the best, Jay. Okay, let's go over now and say hello to Dr. Martin Feldman, who's a holistic doctor in New York City. He's been practicing holistic medicine for over 30 years. He's a board-certified neurologist, professor at Mount Sinai. He comes on each week and gives us a nutrient and some in-depth information on it. Hi, Marty.
Hi, Gary. We're going to talk about bromelain, which is a very important nutrient but doesn't have much respect. It has two functions. One is inflammation and one is digestion. We'll talk about the inflammation primarily because that's the interesting part to me. The bromelain is a protein-digesting enzyme, and it does come from the pineapple plant, as you had mentioned at the beginning. It functions for a wide pH in the stomach, so therefore it can go through the stomach into the small intestine, can still work. It does not get, we'll call it, disgraced by the stomach acid. There are many scientific studies out there showing that bromelain is highly bioavailable to the body as a whole, and it can temporarily alleviate the pain and discomfort associated with many inflammations, such as, and this is very important, the bromelain can help to speed recovery from sports injuries such as sprains, abrasions, hematomas, even lacerations, bruising after cosmetic surgery, coughing, certain type of coughing with bronchial secretion. It can help with that. It can help with varicose veins. And what it does is that it has to go into the body not during digestive process. In other words, you have to take the bromelain, if you're taking it for anti-inflammatory, which is what we're talking about, you don't want to take it with the food. This, taking it with the food has this different function that will help you to digest the food. But we want to, in this particular, let's say, inflammation issue, take an hour and a half before or after the food. And it absorbs very, very well. And it has to be taken continuously because there are many studies show between 24 and 48 hours, it disappears from the body. You've got to keep taking it. What about the whole concept of dose? Well, a beginning dose might be 300 milligrams 3 to 4 times a day for a simple, basic early inflammation. If it would be a child, you mentioned child before, it would be much lower dose for a child. But for an adult, talking about this ballpark area, the more inflammation you have, the higher the dose should be. So you have to kind of titrate it a bit to the severity of the inflammation. And the mechanism by which it works has been shown to be it helps prostaglandin E1 and E3. Those are the good anti-inflammatory prostaglandins in the body. Bromelain helps to increase those in the body to reduce the inflammation. Now, what if you just eat pineapple? Is that enough? No. Eating pineapple will give you some of that enzyme, but it won't be enough to do the proteolytic, heavy-duty anti-inflammatory that we're interested in. What about the safety of this thing? Well, the German system is very, very important. In 1978, Germany set up, through the government, what they call the Commission E standards. And this is a very scientific study of many, many substances. And bromelain is one of 300, and even more than 300, natural remedies that has been approved for treating these disorders, especially post-operative and post-traumatic conditions, that's their language, in the German Commission E. Toxicity is rare. Occasionally someone's allergic to the pineapple part of it, so there might be a touch of a skin issue. If a person is on heparin of, let's say, blood thinner, you don't want to take the bromelain. It does also thin the blood in the process. And if you're taking tetracycline or amoxicillin, you should not take it with antibiotics. So this is the overview of the anti-inflammatory part. Now, what about the next part, which is the digestive issue? The bromelain, if taken for digestion, of course, has to go with the meal. It is not a full-spectrum digestive enzyme. It is mainly directed toward the protein in the meal. If you have a deficiency of digestive enzyme, pancreatic type, this is not a full-spectrum. This is the beginning of what you need, a full-spectrum pancreatic enzyme analog. But this might be part of that whole process. Now, what might we see if protein is not broken down efficiently in digestion, which the bromelain will help with? Well, you can have trouble down lower into the colon. You can have constipation, bloating, flatulence, but not belching. That would be from the stomach. That would be above. Not the food just sitting in the stomach. This all would be protein in the colon fermenting from low digestion of the protein higher up. So we have here a basically simple, inexpensive, effective enzyme which has two potential, let's say, functions that are very important. And it's especially, I've seen it for many, many, many people out there. It helps them with these inflammatory processes, especially the traumatic and a lot of the sports-related injuries. So it should be part of everyone's anti-inflammatory kit.
Thank you very much, Marty. Appreciate the insights. Dr. Martin Feldman, and you can reach him if you want more information at 212-744-4413. And we're coming up to the end of the program. I'd like to thank all of you for calling in. And all this week I'll be doing more time for people to call in with their questions on any of the topics that you feel are important. And we have a lot of good guests, including several Conversations with Remarkable Minds, coming up at you. Now let's say hello to Michael Rupert, whose show follows this here on the Progressive Radio Network. Hi, Michael.
Hi, Gary. How are you doing?
Good. What you got on tonight?
Just me. It's been an eventful week, and those who have followed my work for a long time, we all want to talk about what happened this week with Osama bin Laden and try to read something out of those amazingly scrambled tea leaves.
Let me just share one thought with you. I don't know if you've considered this or not. What do you remember most about Branch Davidians and Cordish when he was under siege from the FBI?
Oh, I was very aware of what was going on at Waco during that period in 1993, and I have seen airborne videos taken showing Delta Force going through executing the people in the compound.
Well, also, you're correct. Also, it later turned out at trial that the FBI was using a type of reconnaissance that allowed them to see how many people were in the house, who was there, and what they were saying. They knew all the conversations. And so when we were later told, well, we didn't know how many children were in there, we didn't know what their status was, that was all nonsense because it was refuted by testimony. Now, here's something that we should consider. I'm not going to dispute at this time that Osama bin Laden is dead. I believe he is. There is question whether or not he died in 2001, and if he did, then how could those people support their arguments given all the video and the story now? Again, I do question this. The CIA this week stated that they had a house right near Osama bin Laden's where they were doing intelligence. That means that they would have had the same type of listening devices. They would have already gotten in on his computer system. They would have known what he was doing. Now, he was there for 6 years. We would also, since our National Security Agency monitors every single phone call in the Middle East, and especially those of the all the people involved in the that we're aware of in the intelligence services of the Pakistanis, we, I believe, should have known or did know that Osama bin Laden was there. And since we had a safe house there, or an intelligence house, I would like to know, did they have the same listening devices? Because if they had the same listening devices, and they also now have a very sophisticated unit that doesn't have to be right by you, but can see into your house, so it sees who's there, can show their figures, can hear the conversations, then that means that we would have been aware of everything he was thinking, doing, saying, who he was communicating with. And therefore, I have to ask this question. I only ask this as a question. I don't make it as a declaratory statement. Was this another October surprise? Was this raid at this time to get Osama bin Laden in order to make political capital at this time to help President Obama and the people around him? It's a question that I'm going to ask. I'm not providing an answer. I'm merely saying, based upon how I'm reading this and how they've done business in the past, it's a legitimate question.
We're going to be talking about that, and I think we're going to have an answer for that during the show.
Great. We look forward to it. We're going to stay tuned and listen in. Michael Rupert coming at you right now on the Progressive Radio Network. Thank you all for listening.